it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Pompey Pubcast that combines the beers and the blues.
Barros for Pompey, round Kuchak goes down, penalty to Portsmouth and Old Trafford. Barros tripped by Thomas Kuchak, who sent off Montari do the job. He steps up, left footed, scores for Pompey. They lead at Old Trafford in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup.
Jamal Lowe's onside, the flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Portsmouth Football Club are promoted to League One.
Curtis across the face, a goal. Marquez! He's won it! 96 minutes on the clock! Porter the heading back to Wembley!
This is Three Lads in the Pub.
Episode 15 of Three
14,
Lads
Liam.
In the Pub. Piss off. Three Lads in a rather empty pub. We're getting special treatment again. And the guys here at the Sally Port Inn have kindly let us come in a little bit earlier in the day because I've got a hectic day, basically. We usually record later in the day. But great to be here. They're doing a bit of cleaning here and there. So if you hear the Hoover, I mean, we've heard a hand dry before, so nothing new. Good afternoon. Just gone midday.
Just afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff Harris. How you doing?
Hello, mate. You good?
I'm all right, yeah. I'm all right. It's been a busy weekend, but I don't sound as tired as our next guest on the show, Mr. Stillwell.
Hello.
Mate, when I spoke to you this morning, well, earlier on, you were like, all right. you look and sound rough, mate. It was a
long day.
Yeah.
My alarm went off at 5 yesterday morning. Had everyone in the car by 6:30. Got back at about midnight.
Oh, vile!
All to watch us in our 6th attempt to win a football game in the town of Morecambe and fail on the 6th occasion.
Yeah, I think I want
this football club that has a record for keeping the FA Cup more than anyone else for 7 years. A football club that once welcomed the greatest player in the world at the time, Ronaldinho, to Fratton Park. The football club that said, "No, we will not go quietly into that good night and let it die." Hello again, Hereford fans. We are the same club that cannot defeat Morecambe in Morecambe. And it's by fucking houseway. So I'm rather tired this morning.
And you had to share a car with Jake Smith for around about 10 hours.
Did you have KFC?
Jake did. I think he had a KFC? Yeah, he did have a KFC.
I mean, obviously.
However, he refused to. He could have had a free one. He could have had a free one if he'd won a wager with one of our other passengers, Ryan. Instead, he bottled the wager. It was a wager that took place at Playzone on Friday.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yes, however, so Jake conned himself out of a free KFC. Jeff, what have you just consumed?
I just had a shot from Mark, the landlord, gave me a shot of naval rum.
Oh, fantastic!
Being a veteran,
my dad has one of those. Was it a Pusser's rum? Oh, okay. Oh, fantastic.
Fair play.
Oh, well, Well done, Jeff. You know what? Just before we started the podcast, started recording, Jeff went, it's lunchtime. If I have a pint now, I'm just going to want to carry on all day. 3 minutes into the podcast, he's got literally a black rum arriving at his table. So, Jeff,
and a
you're
pint,
in,
that's
you're,
it.
You're in for a long Sunday.
I'm on a Leo Sayer today.
We do need to bring up, because we usually go around the table at the start and say, you know, what we've got drinks-wise. Now, after the story we just said about Ryan's long-ass day yesterday, Ryan has decided not to go for the traditional pint of pale ale or IPA, whatever he goes for. What have you gone for, Ryan?
Well, considering I'm somewhat tired, and considering we are in the Sallyport, which is one of the finest collections of spirits I've seen anywhere in a bar in Portsmouth, I've gone for a Bumbu XO rum.
At 12 in the afternoon.
And it's absolutely
I can't
delightful.
Say a word because I just had a shot.
104 rums here, more than any other pub in the world, courtesy from the bar.
Fantastic. Jeff, what else have you got?
I've got a pint of Maltsmiths, which will help dilute down that shot of rum.
Your pint of Maltsmiths is somehow the chaser.
I almost bottled it and went for a Diet Coke, but I have gone for an Amstel, so I'm keeping up with my good run here.
But this is an extraordinary place to just look at. Some of the stuff they've got up here, like they've got Guayana, Diplomatico Ambassadorio.
Oh my God, there's another bar.
Several Bumbus. They've got Yamazakis, Hibikis. They've got Highland Park. They've got Buna Havin. They've got
And their own rum by the looks of it.
Yes, they do have their own
true
rum.
Blue.
A true blue rum.
Yep. Should get on it, boys. Right, anyway, football.
Gin.
Sorry, my bad. So, let's talk football. Ryan, you've kind of, you know, briefly described the journey, but talk us through the game.
Well, as I said last week when we were doing the preview for this game, this is another stubborn team that we'll be going up against rather like...
By the way, I hate to say it, but we kind of predicted this would happen.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Keep going.
And I said the same for Fleetwood, Lincoln. Stubborn teams do stubborn things and they find a way to hang around and be an itch you can't scratch. The same reason that they beat Barnsley recently at home, they've also drawn with Derby. We went there yesterday. My prediction was a gritty, grotty 1-0 win because I didn't think we would carve them open too much. And that they would be fairly organised in defence. However, what I didn't count on was that... Oh, look at this. We've just had a bottle of the True Blue rum brought over.
Gin.
Because I'm looking at my rum and...
That is impressive.
Look at that. It's on a little spinning platform with the light on. Look at it. This is going off the rails very quickly.
Well, we'll take a picture of it and put it on our socials later.
I mean, seeing as we're here, can this be bought?
Yeah.
Do we have a price on the True Blue gin? Again, I keep looking at my own rum. £99 a bottle of True Blue. I'm so fucking
True Blue gin.
True Blue gin. I'm so my head is not functioning today. This is the Sallyport is also the only place in the world you can buy a bottle of True Blue gin.
Hey, finally we got there.
Back to the football. What I didn't factor in playing stubborn Morecambe is our team's capacity to make them look like one of the sides heading to the World Cup in 2 weeks. Because that first half was extraordinarily atrocious. We were carved open, and not carved open by spellbinding play. Carved open because we simply could not be asked. Watch the first goal back. It's one long ball down the side. Ogilvy makes no attempt to close the ball down into the box. It is essentially a penalty because the goal scorer arrives into the box about 3 yards offset from the penalty spot, completely unmarked. So if the ball's arriving at his feet, parallel to the penalty spot, unmarked, no play within 5 yards, you've been given an open play penalty. That's what our defending is now.
He had a chance to pull his socks up and readjust his shorts or whatever and still take the shot.
Yeah.
You could see it coming. It was embarrassing, really.
It's atrocious defending.
As Ryan said last week, these goals we are conceding, we are making it easy for teams to score against us and for us to concede. It's not like like you said last week, you know, in previous episodes, we've got to go out and we've got to score a spectacular goal and we've got to fight and claw our way back into games because other teams aren't giving us easy opportunities. You know, when we do get those easy opportunities, Owen Dell heads it 5 yards over the crossbar. Colby Bishop puts it past the post. Scarlett puts it past the post. You know, all the keeper gets a fingertip to it and pushes it out wide. Teams, we're just so... I said it again after the Ipswich game. We've got a soft underbelly at the moment, and I've not seen anything in recent games. And people go on about the injuries, and people go on about missing our best players. I'm sorry, those issues are still there, even with Marlon Pat back in the side. And I'll say this again. I do not believe Dane Scarlett and Colby Bishop can play up front together. It's almost as though you're playing with a single centre forward up top, and then you've got another centre forward up top, and everything, you know, we either play a certain way to go into Bishop or we play a certain way to go into Scarlett. The two can't play together. You look when Piggott came on yesterday. Piggott was dropping into the hole, getting on the ball, trying to thread the balls through, trying to create something, trying to draw a defender out to make space for that. I think Cowley got it wrong yesterday with bringing Bishop off. He should have brought Scarlett off because I think, I'll say again, Piggott and Bishop are a better combination up front than Piggott and Scarlett or Scarlett and Bishop.
If you also have Denver Hume coming onto the field for the final part of the game, why on earth would you not want the best forward header in the team on the
Denver
pitch?
Denver Hume done more in 20 minutes than Josh Caroma has done in the last six games.
Yeah. And he won't get an assist for the goal yesterday because credit to Zach Swanson, who somehow contorted his neck enough to keep that ball alive on the byline to get it back across to Bishop's tuck in. But it's Denver Hume's pinpoint cross onto the head of Pack, which gets cleared off the line, which then leads to the deflection to Swanson going back to Bishop. But that equaliser is instigated entirely by the quality of Hume's ball into the box. And this is what I do not understand, because there is this predication now on having our wide men cut inside. I don't understand it. Sheffield Wednesday, our goals come from expanding the pitch to its maximum width, getting the ball into the box. What the first goal against Cheltenham is an unbelievable box from the sideline to the back post from, I think it was Jacobs to Morrison, who then plays it back across for Bishop, again using the width of the pitch. Peter Breve got Clark Robertson outside, crossing it in for the Dane Scarlett diving header. You've got that nice little setup from the corner that set up the Swanson equaliser against Shrewsbury. Again, that starts out wide, you cut inside, but because you've used the space outside, you've stretched them out defensively. Hume outside sets up the equaliser against Morecambe. I could go on because there are so many more examples of us. Rather than cutting inside prematurely, we either cross from the flanks, having maximised the width of the pitch, or we bring the ball inside right from the sideline. We're not bringing the ball in from 5 yards within the pitch and then cutting in. We're better when we bring the ball in all the way out. In other words, no matter which way you do it, we are using the maximum width of the pitch when we've been more efficient. And our goals are coming from this. Hereford is another great example. That I mentioned it last week. That goal for Hereford is really well worked. Ogilvy outside, stretching the defence. Because we've stretched the defence, that ball to the back post for Curtis, it can be headed back across to Rico, who arrives unmarked. If we'd narrowed the pitch too much, that header back from Curtis into Rico's path is blocked out. Why? Because they're defending narrowly, but they're not because we've stretched the pitch. Why are we not learning this lesson? Why?
Morgan played with five at the back yesterday. So the centre of that defensive area is going to be congested.
Yeah.
Because they've got their midfielders in there, they've got three centre-halves in there, plus the two full-backs. And you just like... And as soon as Denver Hume came on and they started whipping those balls over, that meant the right-back has to step out. That means the right centre-half has to step out to help cover as well. Because all of a sudden, they're like, we've got someone who's going to go on the outside now and whip this ball in with their left foot. We know Caroma's going to come in, tuck inside the middle. That's great, because we've got four other defenders here now. Cheers, Easy. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Honestly, at the moment, Josh Caroma, for me, does not have a starting slot in this team. For me, he doesn't even get on the bench. He's been that poor. Okay, he scored two good goals, But he hasn't done enough. He got, well, I think Neil Allen gave him a rating of 4 yesterday, and I think that's being generous.
People
were saying that he's better than Owen Dell. If I was Owen Dell and Roland Curtis, if I'm Owen Dell and Roland Curtis, of course I'm going to be pissed off if he's still out there on the pitch.
I know Owen Dell over the past month or so has not been the same Owen Dell, but then again, no one has in the past month, fit or otherwise. But Owen Dell is the best out-and-out winger in this side. I would be tempted that if the rumours about Owen Dell being recalled in January are true, I would actually be tempted to put Cromer right wing. Because I think that on his right foot, if he can drive down to the byline and force defenders to the byline, he can either generate space inside from having dragged a fullback out, or with that right foot of his, which we know is good, put a ball into the box. Because we do win headers in the box.
I've lost count how many times I said Rico should be on the left.
Yeah.
Well, now
Rico goes on the right, because when he does cut in, when he hits it with his left foot coming in off the right, I'm confident it's on target and it's probably going to be a goal on Rico's left foot when he cuts him from the right. But what do we, like you know, rightly said there, Ryan, we need crosses into the box. And I'm gonna go early with one of my third eyes. Right, there was the Clark Robertson free kick yesterday that the ball pings out to Owen Dell on the right. When I watched it back, and I watched it back, now, the ref pulls it back, and Colby Bishop goes over to the ref and went, we had the advantage there, and you can see the ref goes, there's no advantage. And Bishop says, I would have scored from that.
Yeah, we were screaming in the away end. We could
Colby
not believe
Bishop
that.
Turns around for the ref and went, I would have scored from there. Knowing that Owen Dell's got acres of space, he's going to whip the ball in, and Colby Bishop is backing himself to put that ball in the back of the net. That tells me he's a centre-forward who... we know he's a centre-forward who fires on crosses into the box, so let's fucking do it.
The only thing I can think of to play a smidgen of devil's advocate is potentially the linesman thought that Dale was offside. Therefore, the advantage has possibly been negated by the fact that when Dale's received... But that's it. But again, that in those situations... Bishop is correct. You get the ball out wide quickly. You put a quality ball into the box. I back Bishop to win the header.
Well,
and of course, he doesn't even necessarily have to score it. Look at the equaliser. Yeah. We didn't even need to score the ball in from Hume, because it's sometimes not about just winning the first ball. Okay, win the second ball. Make sure they can't clear it properly. At worst, you might get a corner or a deep throw in. There are so many good possible scenarios that come from putting quality balls into the box, and most of them favour the attacking team, not the defending team.
Yeah, he proved he's an aerial threat at Hereford. You know, we know he's got it in play to their bloody strengths. A lot of people have picked up on this as well. I've seen a lot of people talking about this.
You know, a fit Roland Curtis or a half fit Roland Curtis is better than a fully fit Josh Caroma.
Yeah,
because I hear comments after the game, like walking out of the stadium and on social media saying this team isn't working anymore, this 4-4-2 isn't working anymore, but we've changed it. Look how, again, referring back to my comments earlier about the goals we scored earlier in the season, maximising the width of the pitch, what we're playing now is a far cry from what we played before. We played a very wide 4-4-2 in which we were brutal in the turnover. I think it was after the Peterborough podcast where I came out and said, I might get some stick for this. I don't think we've ever played spellbinding football. What we've done is we've played efficient football. We've been great on the turnover. We've been conservative in the first half long enough to get to like 0-0 at half time and then be a tour de force in the second half. In the second half, we have been a turnover machine. We've not wasted chances. Like the amount of chances we had versus goals we scored wasn't wholly disproportionate. We were actually a very efficient team in terms of converting shots into goals. So we weren't the spellbinding team playing wonderful football for 90 minutes, but what we were doing is extremely efficient. But we're not efficient anymore. We're not forcing turnovers in the opposition half. We're now slow to build up from the back. We were never a slow build-up team from the back in August or September. We weren't. But we've been forced into this because we can't force a turnover in the opponent's half. So we're winning the ball back deeper. So we have to start from the back. Then we've got players cutting in, which we're not actually playing 4-4-2 anymore. We're playing 4-2-2-2. We've got a very narrow team for about 60 minutes of the game until we decide crossing might work. And it does.
Funny that.
Yeah. Again, I know we are ravaged with injuries, and right now it's tough to get 11 to 18 players through 90 minutes. You can't always play your preferred style for the whole game. I understand all of that, but sometimes we are actively playing out our way out of situations, out of creating chances. And at the other end, stubborn teams do not look like great teams. Stubborn teams are called stubborn teams for a reason, but Morecambe were all over the place for 90 minutes. Never mind the two one-on-one saves that Josh Griffiths made, more on that in a bit, and the couple of other sort of more standard saves he made. Morecambe missed chance after chance after chance to embarrass us. Their own incompetent finishing and the man of the match heroics from Josh Griffiths is the reason we didn't have a fucking embarrassing result. Like, you know when people at 5 p.m. or when they do Soccer Saturday, when they do all the scoreboards after the game, you'll look down and go, oh, 1-1, 2-1, and there'll be a surprise. You go, oh, fucking hell, 3-0-4. Like, Morecambe's finishing and Josh Griffiths is the reason people looking at scoreboards down the up and down the land yesterday, people looking at scoreboards going, fucking hell, that's really shit. That's embarrassing. Like, we were embarrassing yesterday and we got away with it again. Against Hereford, we did enough to avoid the worst defeat in our club's history. And yesterday, Morecambe's own crap finishing and Josh Griffiths, the 22-23 scapegoat, are the reason we left Morecambe with any dignity in the scoreboard at all. We never deserved to win that game.
It's hard to argue against it. Like I said, look, for the amount of huffing and puffing Dane Scarlett does, he'll get on the ball and he'll drive at players, but he's not a Joe Piggott who's going to be draw the fouls, who's going to be, you know, finding the pockets of space. Look, for all the hard work he does, I just don't think it works up front with Bishop. I really don't. I've seen enough from July all the way through to say it doesn't work. I've seen enough for Josh Caroma to say he is not a starting left winger for us. He wants to play through the centre. He keeps gravitating towards the centre. So if he's going to play in the centre, play a 4-2-3-1 and put Caroma behind Bishop. If that's where he wants to play and that's where he's naturally going, stick him in there and see what he can do.
I would be tempted to put Caroma in against big teams. Teams that are expansive. Teams that are going to leave gaps, because then he can drive to the inside where the gaps are, getting on that right foot, which we know is effective. But we're playing Forest Green recently. We're playing Morecambe. We're playing Fleetwood. Yeah, these teams aren't going to be expansive behind the ball. Narrow central defending. And we're playing into their hands doing
exactly.
So
if those teams are compact in the middle, you've got to go down the outside. You've got to go around the outside. In the first, I think it was on the fourth minute, he actually got to the six-yard box and he went to drive a crossing with his left foot, and I thought, right, okay, maybe the penny's dropped. And then all of a sudden, because the defender slid in, put it out for a corner, he'd never done it again.
No, and it was just, like the one, like, experiment failed.
Right, I ain't gonna do that. So why? The one time you've done it, it's worked. So do it more often.
Yeah.
I've seen enough of him to say. If he went back in January, I'll be like, oh well.
I was just about to ask you that. Do you think there's a chance that he could be sent back if it's not working? There's no point in us having him. Is there better options out there for Cowley?
I would genuinely at some point try him on the right. If the possibility of losing Dale is a realistic one, I would try him on the right just for a couple of games to see how it goes, because I think clearly his best asset is his right foot. But if we're playing teams that defend centrally, stifle the space, and he can't open up and drive with that foot, we are taking away his best asset by asking him to do something he can't do. At least on the right-hand side, you can drive down, you can get behind the fullback, you can get to the byline, or at least you use it as a support role. So if you have him drive down the byline on the right-hand side, you can draw the fullback out because he knows he has to commit, because he knows that's his preferred foot. You can open up the space inside for a central midfielder to arrive late. Or if the defender doesn't commit and backs off, you put the ball into the box.
The Morecambe goal would be the ideal goal for Caroma to start scoring. Coming in off the left wing, filling that you know, top of the box, penalty spot area, you know, or just slight an acute angle to the rear post if it's coming down the right. That's where I would imagine Caroma to be making those runs into the box if we're going down the right hand side.
Yeah.
Not we're going down the centre or we're coming down the left.
But
I'm going to cut inside. Well, we're, at least Denver Hume brought natural width, and all of a sudden Morecambe had to think about, shit, he's going to cross it in with his left foot. We've got an attacking fullback in place now. I said it the other week. I'd bring Hume in and go 3-5-2.
Does he start the next game for you?
Who, Hume?
Yeah.
I would.
I'd have Hume at left wing.
I'll caveat this.
I would. Have you seen him? You seen him on Forgotten Pompey Girls as a female? Woof. That was carry on.
An interesting thread, we'll say. I think we'll caveat this by saying we don't know the extent of the injuries to Robertson and Swanson yet. Obviously, they both hobbled off. Cowley said that Swanson's was a contact knee injury. Robertson, I can't remember. I'm fucking tired. So, on the assumption that everyone who played yesterday can play next Friday, I would put Hume left wing or left midfield. I don't care. I don't care if someone says it's square peg round hole. Well, right now he's the closest to
an actual winger we got.
Yeah, and again, you cannot look past his crossing. I mean, how? I guess the argument is if Derby come down here and be expansive, then it might actually be a game for Caroma to impress. If they do get at us and we can break quickly with Caroma. But, okay, I would then play Hume at left midfield for Wickham. Because Hume does at least have some defensive nous on him, being a left back. And he's also one of the best crossers in this team. Are you seriously telling me he cannot play left midfield at all, ever? Ogilvy has started and played central midfield two times for this football club and won games. It's not an ideal circumstance, but it can work. Hume can surely stand in there and tied over.
If you're playing left wing back, if you play left wing back and you are a competent left wing back, but you're not so much of a competent left back, that means you're good enough to play left midfield, left wing.
Yeah. Because you have the attacking qualities.
Yeah. You're not there for your defensive. And this is what Sunderland fans said about it. Great left wing back, but he's crap at left back. Well, okay, so you either go 3-4-3 and play him left wing, back-ish, left back, left midfield type role. Or you go, you know what, if we are sticking with 4-4-2, I'm going to stick your left wing and just get those crosses in.
They said, I'm sure they said he wasn't very good at defending, but he's a great winger. So yeah.
And right. I'd also say, is trying Denver Hume at left wing back or left midfield, is that apparently more dangerous than not playing Zach Swanson for a month and having Conor Ogilvie at right back? What justifies not playing Swanson for a month? What makes Denver Hume at left midfield scarier than Swanson at right back?
Nothing.
Try it then.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Look, you know, on the back of the Morecambe game yesterday and the injury crisis again.
I mean, it's ridiculous now.
I saw some social media comments saying, oh, Danny Cowley throwing everyone under the bus instead of taking ownership of the shit that he's caused. Well, he's got a point. Because if you go down to the training ground, you see those players go out there and they are training. Those pitches were relayed in the summer and they had extensive work done to them. So you still can't blame the pitches because they were redone. You can't, you know, other players aren't getting injured, so you can't blame the training because, you know, X, Y, and Z aren't getting injured, so it's not exactly the training, is it? So it has to be, and you alluded to this last week, Ryan, it has to be somewhere in the medical department. How can you get a player fit, they're declared fit, they go out and train, and all of a sudden they break down again? That has to be.
Are they being rushed back too quickly?
So there's three scenarios here. The players are declaring themselves fit because they want to get back out there, but they're not fully fit. The medical staff aren't, I nearly said incompetent, but they're not incompetent. That's the wrong word to use.
Don't bloody say it then.
Well, you know, the medical staff...
Unprofessional.
Yeah, the
unprofessional performance.
Unprofessional performance. The medical staff are declaring them fit when maybe they're not. Or it's a combination of the player, the medical staff, and the training. Now, if Danny's annoyed enough to be saying you'll have to ask someone else, and this is the second week now he's alluded to issues elsewhere.
And it's an even more prickly, overt comment than the one before.
That tells me it is somewhere else in the club.
100%. 100%.
Has to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's... So, it's got to be a priority, hasn't it? It's got to be a priority. I wouldn't be surprised that Pompey will be making an announcement in the coming weeks, months, about a new medical person coming in and overseeing that. And now, it is on the agenda for Richard Hughes to look at, the medical and sports science and all that. Look.
I think we're bringing this up because, obviously, if you missed the news, Lowry didn't play, wasn't in the squad. Against Morecambe after coming back, and now he's out injured again. Like,
but Danny said he's broken down four times in training.
It's just...
That is shocking.
Yeah. I hate to lighten the mood, lads, but just to remind you, we're on TV on Friday.
Oh.
Could it get any worse?
It's...
Is it, what is it? On Comedy Central, isn't it?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave.
Well, should we put Morecambe behind us? Look, it was fair play, Ryan, and everyone else that went to that, because that was a long one. And I don't envy at all. Fair play. Let's look ahead then to Derby, which is, like we just said, Friday. Come in on TV as well. What are you saying, Ryan? Obviously, Derby, the big guns come down from the Championship. But how are they doing? I haven't even been paying attention, to be honest.
Well, it's been an interesting start for them.
Yeah,
They've already gone for a manager sacking.
Yeah.
I felt was harsh because you have to look at the circumstances of their summer. We signed Marlon Pack because the deal, Chris Kirchner's deal to buy the club fell through. Now, we didn't sign Pack until the second week of July, something like that. I'm pretty sure the podcast had started back up by the time we signed Pack. So... Derby had not even completed the deal to buy the club, the second deal anyway, until what, the second, third week of July? At which point 10 players came through the door approximately a week before the season started on July 30. So Derby, for all intents and purposes, are about a month and a half behind everyone else in terms of pre-season
for Derby
preparation. But I don't understand the sacking as a result. I don't understand how you can sack... was it Rosinia who was the initial manager there? And I believe, I saw the other day, I'm actually going to look this up now, he was tutored for a Championship job.
He's gone a hole.
Yeah, he's gone a hole.
Yeah.
So he's gone up the way.
Maybe something else had gone on there. I'm still baffled.
Paul Warne's come in. Great experience of getting promoted from League One. He did it like four times with Rotherham. He's gone there. I think they've won four of their eight league games since he's come in. I know they've not been great in the cup, but league games is what ultimately will Derby be focusing on. So it's been a middling start for them, but again, their preparations have been so affected. They're so far behind everyone in terms of actually preparing for a full-blooded 46 season of League One. They are starting to get back into it, though. They are sixth in the table. They've got games in hand on first through fourth. They win that game in hand, they could potentially jump to fourth. So they are slowly entering back into the conversation, and they're behind us in goal difference, albeit we have a game in hand. So they're very much after a discombobulated start. They're rejoining the picture as everyone expected them to do so.
Talk just a quick before we cut. I'll come at you in a sec, Jeff. Talking of weird manager sackings, what the hell are Wigan doing? I know they've had a fairly poor run, but for what he's done for that club and to get rid of him.
But they signed a new deal for him.
New 3-year
deal. That was what baffled me.
Yeah.
About a week before, wasn't it?
2 weeks beforehand, they gave him a contract extension.
There's clearly something going on there.
Before it was public about not paying their players.
Has that happened again recently?
It was known that they were late paying their players in League One as well before they got promoted. I reckon they'll go in administration again.
Yeah.
They went into administration, dropped down the leagues, they've come back up. And they've bought success. That is a team who have bought success.
100%.
You know, don't get me wrong, Liam Richardson done a fantastic job there. And we see the start of the managerial merry-go-round with Nathan Jones doing a cracking job in his first game at Scum. you know, the room with Gary O'Neill maybe going to Luton now and all that. But
you see who Bournemouth are potentially getting? Have you seen that, Ryan?
I might have done.
Bielsa?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's going on?
You know, so, but anyway.
I've heard Cowley's going for the England job as well. Carry on.
But, no, it's just bizarre, isn't it?
But
just...
back to the Derby game, Jeff. What's your views on it? Obviously, Dave, they're a very similar, obviously, they've done similar to what we've done there. Like Ryan said, goal difference isn't far apart at all. They're placed behind us. What are you saying?
You look at other teams who seem to have put their squad together after Pompey, and we were quite vocal about Pompey's transfer business, and we had a flurry of signings, and then it died down again. You look at Derby signings, they all majority pretty much happened after Pompey had signed their squad. And, okay, yeah, it takes time to gel a team together and everything else, but they're picking up results. They may not be totally pleasing on the eye. They may be getting the odd draw against teams like Morecambe, and their results seem to be mirroring what we're getting against those same teams and everything else. So, it, you know, on paper, it's probably going to be a top seven ball draw, but knowing Pompey, be a totally typical Pompey thing to do, to go out there and for some whatever twist of fate, we'll have a barnstorming game and it'll be open-ended. It was quite interesting yesterday. Danny Cowley was saying the game yesterday was like a basketball match, meaning it's going end-to-end and we weren't in control and everything else. I'm sorry, but when you play high-pressing, high-tempo football, that's the type of football match it turns into, because you're forever turning the ball over. And if you lose the ball, you're turning it over again. Oh, just like a basketball game. So I don't...
And yet we were unable to turn the ball over on Morecambe.
No. So you know, it seems we've gone from, again, like last season. We started doing this high press, high tempo, and we were dominant in the turnover the first 25-35 minutes. We had the highest turnover stat in the opening half, and we started out this season like that, and then, you know, like last season, we stopped doing the things that made us good, when you should be keep doing the things that make you good and then it enhance on those things that make you good, and therefore you start winning more games. I know I said you can't use the injuries as an excuse. And I don't think you can, because you've got more than capable players who can come in. Okay, Jay Mingy comes in and Ryan Tunnicliffe comes in. It was a bit of some people raising their eyebrows yesterday about why is Tunnicliffe starting ahead of Morel or Mingy with Marlon Pack. But maybe Danny and Nicky are going, right, we're losing Joe Morel for at least four weeks. Let's see how Tunnicliffe and Pat get on in midfield.
Also, the potential of Morel getting injured and that financial gain of him going to the World Cup is one you can't really risk.
Look, the positives are we didn't lose against Morecambe. We go into the Derby game, similar run of form, similar results with other teams that they've played. And knowing, like I said, like a weird twist of fate, it'll probably be a really good, entertaining game, I hope.
I think with a poor-worn Derby side, weirdly, we'll be playing a stubborn side. Like, his Rotherham sides were never domineeringly expansive, 75% of the ball, 95 shots on goal, pressing you 10 yards away. They are very well organised, they are restrictive, and they do break with ferocity. I remember going to Rotherham... our first season back in League One when they were under Warnen, it was quite a dull game, not much in the way of breaking, but every time they managed to get forward, they did so with such intensity, and they won it in the 90th minute with a breakaway, which I think it was one former Pompey player setting up another, Michael Smith, to score the winner in the 90th minute. So I think Derby will, in a way, frustrate us in that they will be organised, such as a Paul Warne side is. I'm not sure we're going to face a Derby side that is like an MK Dons, if you will, or like a Plymouth. I think there'll be a more middle of the road, stubborn style of football. And I do not look forward to us playing against that, because that seems to be our biggest enemy now.
I'm calling it now. I reckon around 25-30 minutes, if it's 0-0 and the usual players are doing their usual thing, the Cowleys are going to start to feel what Fratton Park is like when the fans are turning on you.
The thing is, if we're 0-0 against Derby, that's probably less egregious than what we're managing to do recently. I think it's the manner of the 0-0 that would be to your point.
You'll get those sporadic pockets of fans will start the negativity. They'll start the halftime boos. They'll start this. You look at the stats against Morecambe, again, similar stats to all the other games. So it's not as though we're not creating. 14 shots we created, only 5 on target. It's 512 passes or 517 passes yesterday.
And again, the quality of chance that Morecambe missed.
Derby
will not stand by idly when they're breaking away if we are that pedestrian again.
Morecambe had 15 shots. 4 on target and 8 off target.
And you some of those off target.
You
efforts.
Do that against Derby, they'll be putting them in the back of the net.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll face an organised side that will move quickly when they have the ball.
What's your score predictions, Jeff, first?
I think it'll be a 1-0 either way. I can't see it being.
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
Ryan?
I think she was asking, do I want another drink?
I mean, you do.
I'm going to have to drop Jeff home. Ryan?
No more rum for me, please.
you need a Coke to go with that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, all right, fair enough. I'm doing a rum taster, very nice. Anyway, my score prediction.
There'll be a time hop later. 8 hours later, Liam, Ryan, and Jeff are still talking in the pub.
Yeah, and it's just me and Jeff. Like rum drunk and another thing. So cheers. My score prediction for Friday would probably be on the lines of 2-1 Derby.
I was going to say the same. Yeah, 2-1 Derby. I'm
5% ABV. I'm not sure I can have that. I'm driving.
Oh dear. Well, it's just me for a second as Jeff's paying for a beer, Ryan's tasting rum.
Glorious.
I'm not going to stop the recording because this is great. Was that nice?
That was glorious.
Yeah. Maybe just have a little bit. Anyway, so you're going 2-1. I'm going 2-1 Derby as well.
I'm 1-0 either way. Right. I'm undecided. I mean, that's
great, isn't it?
I've given up saying
I rarely early, go against
early goals,
us.
Early, you know, early wins. And
be realistic and it might, yeah.
While we're here, before we move on to the next section, there was just two things I wanted to raise. One was on the back of your comments of Cowley calling it a basketball game. My problem with calling it a basketball game is that in America, where basketball is, you know, more popular than anywhere else, teams have a tendency to put the ball in the net more than once. I wish we could be like a basketball game and do that. Secondly, I understand, while I've previously made the comments, don't boo draws, because we shouldn't be again, and we can be much worse than drawing. I also think that in response to people saying, you know, why are people trying to make draws sound like defeats? And I'm going to try and put forth a very logical response to that. What is the point differential between a draw and a win? 2 points.
That's fucking spicy too.
What is the point differential between a draw and a defeat? 1 point.
1 point.
So you actually, if you are able to throw away a draw into a defeat, that is less egregious than throwing away a win and turning it into a draw. You're actually giving up more points in a single action if you should win a game but only manage a draw than you should draw a game but actually lose. Every time you fail to win a game and you throw away a winning position, or you'll play your way out of winning scenarios and only take a point, you're giving up 2 points on that basis. If you show up to a game with an approach of primarily we'll go for a point and we'll see if we get anything else, and you don't quite get the point and you get a defeat, you only give up 1 point, because really that's what you showed up for. But if you show up to win and you drop, and it turns into a draw, you drop 2 points. So actually, going with a mentality to win a game and only coming out with a draw, you give away more than if you show up to a game to draw and you actually lose. And considering our ambitions are the mere promotion or playoffs, it helps to win games. And we've got some relentless teams in this division right now. You're throwing away sets of 2 points on a fortnightly basis, as we seem to be doing right now, is hampering us, because 2 becomes 4, becomes 6, becomes 8, becomes 10, becomes untenable.
Can I give myself dinner of the week, by the way?
We haven't got to that yet, but you may put forth your nomination.
We've just been given some nibbles, and I picked.
You didn't
one of
enjoy
them
that one, did you?
No, I mean, I've eaten four of them. I've eaten four of the same, whatever it is. And I noticed the first one was spicy, but I still carried on. Now my mouth's on fire, so I think I deserve potential dinner of the week. But,
Are they like wasabi nuts? Or?
I don't know what they are, but they're nice.
They're wasabi nuts. Yeah, the green ones, give it away.
Oh, I haven't tried that. I don't know what I tried, but it was nice, but it's spicy. Anyway.
Spice.
Give a little bit of spice.
What? It's been a bit of a...
That's a good impression.
Thank you.
That's the best one you've ever done.
Ryan's tends to be good at impressions. Some impressions.
Well, I tend to be good at most impressions, just whether or not it goes down well. Being a man who speaks 6 languages, I am good at impressions. It's just a factor of whether or not people like it.
What a man. While I chew this, features. Jeff, do you want to go first?
Oh, right, yeah.
Talk one day you'll be ready.
Well, one day you'll do yours.
Well, if you bring your fucking headphones.
Nice deflection. Jeff's third eye, what we got? Oh, you've given one.
So I've obviously said one earlier. Owen Dale coming off, unhappy at being subbed, sat in the dugout with his arms crossed like a petulant 5-year-old.
Do more.
And then Danny Cowley came over to say something to him and held out his hand, and Owen Dale, you know, a few expletives were said and all that. He's obviously unhappy, so and it's not the first time he's come off and he's been unhappy with coming off. Ronan Curtis done it against Hereford. Okay, Ronan Curtis had a knock, but even so, he was still aggrieved about coming off and certain players on the opposite wing still staying on. So I wouldn't say all was rosy in the Pompey camp at the moment. And Owen Dowler obviously coming to the side, and he's a breath of fresh air down that right wing. 71 minutes, Dane Scarlett gets fouled, and I called him the Morecambe Din commentary team. Say it was a great tackle. The Morecambe player never got anywhere near the ball. It was over on the right hand wing by the dugout, and he came in from behind, never got the ball, nowhere near the ball. And all game the Morecambe commentary team were saying that, you know, how they were great tackles, and how Portsmouth tackles were cynical fouls all the time. And it was just like, will you shut up, you pair of dins? And the last one is a third eye, not from our social media.
Carry on. Yep.
But from Ipswich Town's social media. And they get an honourable mention because Danny O'Reilly, an Ipswich fan who follows us, he came on the Twitter space, gave us some grief one day. Because I follow him, followed him back, Ipswich fans seem to be throwing their anger towards Marcus Harness.
But now they're
adding into it. Pompey fans did warn us about this.
Yes. But you scammed us, didn't you?
You know, so so if you want a Sunday afternoon laugh, go on Ipswich Town's social media feed and you'll see the irony of the Ipswich fans directed not only at Marcus Harness but Connor Chaplin. So
And of course runaway Ipswich, the blue Brazil of the East Anglian territories, since beating us and declared themselves League One champions, have lost at home to Lincoln and drawn at home to Cheltenham.
So One Ipswich fan said, how can we be drawing with tin pot teams with like Charlton and Cheltenham? Oh, he's just had a rum.
Liam's just consumed a test of coconut rum.
That's really nice.
Mexican coconut rum.
Oh, that's really lucky.
Taken him from Diet Coke to coconut
Mexican
rum.
We started this podcast a year and a half ago. Was it in the Rutland we started the very first?
Yes.
Yeah. Liam was on Diet Coke and here he is. Coconut rum. And he's looking back at the bottle now.
That's
longing
really
after
nice.
It.
It's like it's got a bit of a kick to it, but it's quite deceiving. You could drink that like water. Yeah, very nice.
So anyway,
this coconut rum. So in the next pub we're in, Liam's gonna. You got any coconut rum?
No, I'm not.
So this Ipswich fan says we need to get out of this tin pot league. We can't be drawn with tin pot teams like Cheltenham and Charlton. To which one of their fans turned around, the Cheltenham fan turned around, but you're in League One, which makes you tin pot as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So exactly. They're my third eyes.
This comment I made last week was like, you have to respect every team in your same division as you. You're in the same division for a reason.
Any third eyes you want to add, Brian?
See if I've got anything.
Let me just open my notes.
Well, I guess. No, it's mostly any other business stuff.
All right. By the way, sorry if you can hear us chewing on these nibbles, but just can't be asked.
You want to eat nuts?
These nuts. Right. Dub and dinner of the week then, Ryan.
Hang on.
If you're listening with turtle beaches on, I do feel sorry for you.
I mean, you said these were spicy, Liam.
I don't know what I had, but they were definitely spicy. I mean, that rum's just... Mum, can you pick me up?
I said yes for the barmaid taking away my empty pint glass, and she brought back another pint. It looks like I am staying on for a session.
I mean, you've done well, yeah.
I think we should do that one day, right? Just do a pod.
What, sharp to do an early podcast?
What we need
just
is...
Just get smashed.
What you need is to make up a mobile recording setup, and we'll just go to pub on a pub crawl.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
A live pub crawl. That'd be
we'll
good.
We'll do like the we'll do a game review in one pub, then we'll do a game preview in another pub, then we'll do features in another pub, then we'll do A and B in another pub. By the time we get to... You know, doing the outro of the show, Liam. Like, join us next week. If
I do think that'd be quite popular if we did a podcast where we got dropped off, right? We got lifts, and then we just see how long we go for, and just keep getting drinks in to see what happens by the end of it. Yeah. Fuck off, Josh Cromer.
Doing spoons. We're on table 74.
Hey, hell, Liam.
That rum's gone to the end. Anyway, right, yeah, double dinner of the week.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea. No, that's not a good idea. That's dangerous, Jeff. Don't say. I don't like it when people say that on put it on social media. I'm on this table, like it's dangerous.
Yeah, you end up with like a plate of baked beans and eggs instead of like a pint of.
Oh, well, that is a good idea. We should try that. Carry on.
To be fair, when I did it in Blackpool, I got a lot of free drink.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's dangerous. Go on, carry on.
So dinner of the week, I'm giving to Morecambe fans, but specifically a small sect of Morecambe fans, like no more than five, maybe.
That was the whole ground, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, it was their remembrance ceremony pre-kickoff. Very well conducted by those involved. And then the last post was played. Gentlemen, what follows the last post?
A moment of silence.
Does it fuck?
Clapping at Morecambe.
Yeah.
How
are people not aware of this?
See, one person clapped,
and then it got
shushed. So someone else clapped, and then it just turned into this massive crescendo of clapping.
See, this is what almost happened on the Spurs game, because I was driving up to London at the time, and they did it before the Spurs game, and people started clapping. So the referee just acted quickly and blew the whistle straight away to save the embarrassment. Probably should have done that, but yeah.
The thing is, we do this every. Yeah.
How well
every
did we
year,
observe, by the way, the last home game? Amazing.
Yeah. But every year, you do things like your car insurance. You don't get that wrong. You do your home insurance. You don't get that wrong. How do you screw up a minute silence after a last post? It quite literally costs nothing to shut the fuck up. Every now and then I should try that. But at least... At least on the appropriate occasions, like the last post, I keep my arms folded. So this one idiot clapping has then started the whole stadium. But the problem is everyone's realised halfway through the applause, oh shit, we shouldn't be clapping. Oh, this is awkward. Right, let's slow it down to... So you get halfway through the minute silence and the clapping comes to this ridiculously awkward end. Then there's a silence. Well, great, then what? We got half a silence. So that one Morecambe fan and his little mates went, yeah, he's onto something
here. The Morecambe commentary team, I think they actually made a comment of a brilliantly observed 2 minute silence. As though they expected it to be clapping and then going to silence,
yeah.
Dins.
Yeah. The proper protocol for a 2 minute silence is 30 seconds of clapping followed by night.
Yeah. Because they've done that on the battlefields of Passchendaele.
Yeah. I've seen that film where they do that. They all charge the Lewis guns from the German side clapping. I mean, for fuck's sake.
Five
so
Morecambe
simple.
Fans win Dim of the Week.
Yes. Dub of the Week, I'm actually going to give to Josh Griffiths because it's not been a great start for him, either in certain performances or the amount of stick he's got from Pompey fans. 90% of it is undeserved. 80%. He has had some issues, problems, but again, he has become the 22-23 scapegoat lot. Most of it is just people looking for stuff to have a go at rather than actually analysing what's correct. Again, we get humbled, we get massacred, we get embarrassed, we get trounced, we get fucking destroyed on the shores of Narnia if it is not for Griffiths. That save he made right on the stroke of half time, 1-on-1, it was actually 2-on-1. And then Raga gets taken out of the equation and then it becomes a true 1-on-1 with the goalkeeper. The save that Griffiths makes to tip it over the bar was greeted A, by raucous applause from the Pompey fans, feeling very relieved that Griffiths has just kept us alive away to Morecambe, followed by shouting to the rest of the minty shambles that took to the field. That was embarrassing as they left the field at half time, but still applauding Griffiths. Then Griffiths makes another huge 1-on-1 save in the second half when I think it was 1-1. So he's not only kept us in the game at 0-0 long enough for us to eventually get back in the game, he's then, after we equalised and we still can sort our shit out defensively, kept us in the game at 1-1. So yesterday, Josh Griffiths on multiple occasions preserved our precious point at Morecambe, and that's why he gets Dub of the Week, because it's not been the greatest start for him. He's faced a lot of shit. 8% undeserved, but yesterday he is singularly the reason we got out of Morecambe alive.
Definitely. I think, you know, it was all I would say is, where are all these social media haters now? You know, because they were, we said it last week, the majority of one-on-ones with goalkeepers end up in the back of the net, yet somehow he's pulled off 3 one-on-ones yesterday.
I saw one of the saves, yeah, fair play. Great save. Deserves a bit of credit where it's due for once, because people are quick to jump on his back. Any other business then, lads?
I'll make it quick, as per your off-air instructions.
Can I just admit that I've just double-checked, I've got a kids' party today, and I may have got the time wrong. It starts in 50 minutes, and I haven't even moved.
Because I only have 3 things to talk about in AOB. Number one, Joe Morrell had an interview in the week, I think it was with Jordan Cross of The News, saying that his focus has not been 100% on Pompey because he's focused on the World Cup. Actually, I'm not going to give him shit for that, because you realise that he is Welsh player. Wales have not made the World Cup for like 70 years.
Whatsoever.
They might never make a World Cup in Morrell's career again. He might not even get selected.
Well,
even if they do. So, of course, and naturally, he's Welsh. Wales don't make the World Cup a lot. He goes to a World Cup today. He's obviously going to be distracted. I respect his honesty. I wish that players are more honest in talking about things like that. Well done, Joe Morrell. Good luck at the World Cup. Number two. I've already spoken about that. Good news for you, Liam. I'll move on. Number three, I cannot believe the number of people who now approach us at games to talk about this podcast. It is crazy. Fantastic. Yeah. Like, the only thing that separates every single Pompey fan at home game or away game and us three is the fact that we pick up a microphone on a Sunday afternoon. That is it. We are not important in any single aspect, but the fact I was approached
before the game, during the game, halftime, and after the game by multiple different groups of listeners. Unbelievable. I love the fact that we have the respect and the attention of so many Pompey fans who dedicate themselves to following this team up and down the land, either in the stadium or on the radios or on social media. Yeah, it is wonderful to have your respect. It's wonderful to chat to you as well. So many people are complimentary of us, and we had some really good chats with some of our listeners yesterday. Shout out to the Argyles. Shout out to the boys from Glasgow that came down from the game. Hopefully next time you come down from Scotland, you'll see something better than that.
I want to give a notable mention to a guy called Kieran Fox. Kieran's coming down, hopefully, for the home game against Ipswich. He left Portsmouth at the age of 2 and has never been back. But he is a Pompey fan. That rum and beers are going to my head. He's a Pompey fan through and through. But he's never really been to Fratton Park. And he's bringing his boy to his first ever game at Fratton Park against Ipswich. So, he's struggling to get tickets potentially for that game. So if anyone does have any spares, give us a shout and we'll put you in touch with Kieran.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. You can make it.
So who currently lives in Nottingham, and he's gonna come home for the first time since he was 2 years old.
Fair play.
He's now a full blown adult.
That's very good. I've got one thing to add, and it's a bit of a sad one, really. I know we always moan. Well, we moan about Pompey playing late. You know how we've been performing lately and how shit it's been. But just want to bring up this statement which has come out from Bath City. You may have seen the news about Alex Fletcher, the lad that collided with the advertising board. The family have released a statement saying he's still in a critical condition in intensive care, but starting to show small signs of improvement. Yeah, just a bit of. Bit of a reality check, really. I think we all need it, don't we?
I read that Fletcher needed emergency neurosurgery.
Awful.
After colliding with the ring around the pitch at Bath is concrete base.
Yeah.
And he collided headfirst with it, and he required emergency neurosurgery. I also read that the ambulance took like 40 minutes to get there. Quite frankly, based on that, it's... I don't want to speculate too much, but it might be a miracle that he's even alive if it takes that long to get an emergency vehicle out to him. So it sounds like one of the more horrific...
Just a bit of
injuries or incidents I've heard of in a football game.
Just obviously all of us send our best wishes to his family and him and all the Bath City supporters. Must have been horrible to witness that. But yeah.
I think at that level as well, the other important thing is you're not set for life playing non-league football.
No.
Like, you've still got a family to provide for.
Yeah.
And that's where I really feel for them, because I hope he can pull through now. I hope he can have a quality of life after what sounds like a horrendous, hopefully not, but horrendous life-changing injury.
Yeah, awful. So, like I said, we send our best wishes to the family and friends of Alex Fletcher and him as well, of course. Jeff, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I look forward to your first feature next week.
Cheers, mate. On that note, thank you for to the guys down at... Actually, we can do it nearly, because Ryan bought his headphones, you didn't, so you're dinner of the week already.
I'll bring some headphones next week.
And yeah, cheers to Mark down at the Sallyport Inn. Fantastic pub. Really, really great pub. And we have got to come here one day and just have a rum session, lads, because they're and whatever else. There's just honestly so much on that bar. But great hospitality here. Special treatment for us, as ever. Thank you, lads. Ryan, thank you, mate.
Thank you, folks.
Go to sleep. Jeff?
Go on the piss.
Yeah, keep on it, mate.
No, I'm off to watch Reese play against Moneyfields in the Hampshire Cup.
Good luck to Reese.
And... on the sideline.
Right, lads, thank you very much. Enjoy your nuts ride. And thank you, Pompey fans, for listening to Three Lads in a Pub.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.